Prime Minister Narendra Modi is in New York. You've seen pictures of him coming out of the plane and in New York being received. And by the way, before I get down to the business of today's Cut the Clutter, look at these pictures. There's a change of style, which means there is a restoration of the old style, at least as far as the beard is concerned. So the pandemic beard is now, long pandemic beard is now gone. So look at that picture. Nevertheless, he's stepping into another country after a long time. After a long time means almost, or not exactly 2 years, but almost 2 years. Now that's a long time for someone like him who travels a lot overseas and who likes international interactions. It's a long time for him to be away. So he now lands in New York, hits the ground running. It's a short trip, but on the first day itself, he meets his quad partners, two of them one-on-one. That is Prime Minister Suga of Japan, who's on his way out, but Prime Minister of Japan, and also Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia. And because I'm mentioning his name today, I will also just give you a little note of apology. A few days back, when we did our Cut the Clutter on AUKUS, which was watched by a lot of you, I don't know why, but I made an absent-minded error and called him Tony Morrison instead. So apologies to Scott Morrison and apologies to Tony Morrison also, Scott Morrison. But the most important event, that is the centerpiece of this. And remember, centerpiece of this visit is not even going to be the Quad Summit. That is when all the four chief executives of the Quad countries meet. That is India, US, Japan, Australia. That will be the last meeting. But the centerpiece of this visit will be the one-on-one meeting between Prime Minister Modi and President Joe Biden. Now, they've known each other. In fact, Prime Minister Modi also hosted Joe Biden as the Vice President of America when he was Obama's deputy. But after his taking over the presidency, this will be the first one-on-one meeting with them, physical. They have done meetings remotely, but this will be the first meeting physical and one-on-one. And this is very important because this will then be picking up the thread from where Indo-US relations were left off in Donald Trump's times, where Donald Trump left these off. So the question is, what do you expect from the Biden administration? Will it be the same? Will it be different? Will it be better? Will it be worse? Will it be more energetic than Trump? Will it be less energetic than Trump? Will it be more stabilizing or more predictable than Trump? Or will it be more boring than Trump? Or more cautious than Trump? So in America, there is a saying, Americans in fact love to say it, when they want to say somebody is very honest or somebody is straightforward, they say the man you see is the man you get. Now, how does it apply to Joe Biden? And I know that by the time you are watching this, we'll still be about 24 hours away from the meeting. So we don't know exactly what will happen. And when that happens, we'll talk about it later. But the fact is, apply the test to Joe Biden. Is the man you see the man you get? Now, if you look at his last 8 months' performance, unfortunately, he does not pass that test, because all the claims he made to being more international than Trump, restoring his international relationships, restoring its international alliances, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for example, restoring the Iran nuclear deal, or at least beginning negotiations there, on loosening up trade curbs, even for his European allies, of following a more humane approach to immigration, particularly from America's southern borders, he has not lived up to any of those promises. So all those remain what they were, campaign promises, right? Campaign promises. And a lot of the things that he attacked Donald Trump about, he just let them be. So the man you saw is not the man you've got, at least not until now. And voters in America are beginning to see it. And I'll give you some data on that, because his ratings have really fallen. His ratings have fallen drastically within the first year, which is quite unprecedented for American president. After the high of the election campaign and victory, everybody loses a little bit, but the loss for him has been humongous. In fact, if you look at some of the poll results right now, and I will share these with you in some detail in a bit, Only 22% support his handling of Afghanistan, for example. Also, Gallup tells us that it's the first time that his rating has fallen below, his affirmative rating has fallen below 50%. And more than 50% people think that they are dissatisfied with his governance. That's very alarming for Biden. So the American voters are seeing the same thing as probably lots of heads of state and chief executives across the world are seeing. So what is the problem with him? So one problem is something that I find some American commentators writing. That is, his foreign policy is now turning out to be as Trumpian as Trump's was. So after promising a big departure for Trump, he's actually continuing everything that Trump did. Exactly the same way, not challenging anything. And in fact, and I'm adding that, it's my line, I'm adding it here, so don't blame anybody else to it. The difference, only difference between him and Trump is that he is so deadly boring. Trump was at least entertaining. You could laugh at him, you can make a joke of him. Joe Biden is boring as hell, and yet he is doing exactly what Trump was doing on the larger foreign policy. In fact, one of the strongest pieces I have read on this over the past few days has been written by Fareed Zakaria in his regular Washington Post column. And he says that he met a German diplomat who told him that Biden is now making them miss Trump to the extent that Biden consults his allies even less than Trump did. And you remember the rude things that Trump said about the Germans. He went to Germany and said, you owe me so much money, I've been protecting you, you give me so many tens of billions of dollars, otherwise I'm going away. So he said a lot of insulting things. But he was still seen to be, in retrospect, a more reliable ally than Joe Biden. Now, Germans have their own problem with him because Germans don't want to be dragged along by the Americans in their new Cold War with the Chinese. Because Germany is a large economic power, they have big economic vested interests in China. So they don't want to be dragged in like that, particularly when they get nothing in return. And France, on the other hand, the other big European country, that is now feeling left out and is angry, had withdrawn its ambassador and has gone through this big tantrum. And why did they do so? They didn't do so because they lost out on a submarine contract. Because obviously they know that competitively, they were not offering what the Americans and the Brits have offered Australia, which is SSNs. That is nuclear-powered submarines. The France had not put those on offer. But they are feeling slighted that the Americans and the Britons did not consider them trustworthy enough to share with them the fact that they were negotiating or going ahead with this deal. So it is that sense of being jilted that, you know, after so many decades of partnership, NATO, shared security concerns, shared strategic interests, you didn't even tell me. So this is that kind of gila shikwa. And that gila shikwa you usually don't expect to have with your best friend or with your most important friend or with the anchor of your global security alliance. That is America. That is the reason Macron said that I'm withdrawing my ambassadors from Washington and from Canberra in Australia. And sure enough, now Biden has talked with him. He's tried to make up with him. Looks like the ambassador is coming back. So this was a little bit of a tantrum. Like, aapko yaad hai wo Bobby ka gaana, main mehke chali jaungi. Tum dekhte rahiyo. So France threw a tantrum like that. Main mehke chali jaungi. And then Biden has bent over backwards, tried to reason with them. And France is not going to make it. At least the ambassador is not going to make it. Ambassador is coming back to Sasural. So he's come back now. He's coming back now to Washington. But the fact is that a lot of these countries now, these are allies of America. They have this problem because they can't slot Biden, because they had expected Biden to be different from Trump. They are now finding Biden looking like a shadow of Trump, except a very pale and boring shadow. And that shows in everything. In fact, even if you see, it's an analytical point I'm sharing with you, even if you see the state of the Quad, everybody knew that Quad was not a military alliance, right? That was well known, unlike AUKUS. But there was always a pretense that Quad is a lot more than just a talk shop. The Quad is not SARC. Quad is not a talk shop. Talk quad means something substantive. Why all these big naval exercises? Why all this interoperability? Because there was a subtext that we don't call it a military alliance, but there is something to it. China, khabardar, samal ke rehna. But see how the idiom has changed since the Biden administration has come in. Blinken's statement in Delhi, very categorical. This is not a military alliance. He was asked, if one quad member is attacked, will the others come to its aid? He said no. Now, there are diplomatic ways of saying that no, but this was said very emphatically. Again, if you see Biden's speech at the UN, he delivered his speech early in the succession of heads of state to speak at the UN. And he said, what was the promise he made through the quad? That we will now be manufacturing 1 billion vaccines to be given away to poor countries in India. Thank you very much. But Quad Alliance was not about the vaccines. Donald Trump, with all his flaws, would not have understated the import of the quad like this. I'm not going so far as to say undermine, because that's a substantive thing. And we'll get a sense of some of that after the summit meeting. Although, you know, the problem with summit meetings is when they take place, all the coverages, all the media coverages, masterstroke, everything achieved, great chemistry, great friends, my friend so-and-so, my friend so-and-so. And facts emerge in the course of time. But, you know, as we say in Hindi, tel dekho, tel ki dhar dekho. So look at the oil and then see how it flows, what its consistency is. So what you will see tomorrow after the summit will be the tel, the oil, and then you will see how it flows. Fir aapko tel ki dhar dikhegi. But if you go by Biden's record so far, it is not encouraging. And what is it that people are upset about, that your friends are upset about? Forget adversaries. We are not talking about the Chinese. See what the friends are tense about. So Fareed Zakaria's article, which I'm sharing with you, he says that more than anything else, Biden's policy now look like continuation of Trump's policies. If anything, it's continuation of Trump's policies and repudiation of Obama's policies before Trump, despite the fact that Biden was Obama's deputy. Now, Biden is the senior-most foreign policy dada in Washington, because he's been running the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's been a senior member on all foreign policy establishment, whether his party has been in power or not been in power. So he has the most experience, and he was with Obama those 8 years. And yet he's not picking up the baton from Obama on anything. He's picking up the baton from Trump. That is what Fareed Zakaria also is complaining about. And I told you what this German diplomat told him. Now, Afghanistan, the way he made his withdrawal, it's all right to say that I'm making a withdrawal, because Trump had planned a withdrawal. And he said, I'm standing by the agreement Trump left me because I have no choice. Frankly, his critics then ask him the question, his critics within the Democratic Party, that if you had no choice but to follow Trump's policies, why didn't you finish the job of building that wall on the border with Mexico? You stopped that? No, because you thought that was wrong. So why couldn't you also make modifications in the Afghan policy? But once again, you can see that no homework was done on the Afghan policy. It was cut and run. I will give you later some data figures and some survey results that tell you why the Americans did not even pay attention to the data that they had paid for and that was available to you. Because it was just decided ke bhago yahan se. Similarly, Trans-Pacific Partnership. Trans-Pacific Partnership, Obama had started it. It was great fanfare. Obama, Biden welcomed it. It was their doing. Trump undermined it and Trump destroyed it. When Trump destroyed it, he was criticized by Biden as well. Biden in opposition, but Biden in power has not talked about reviving it. If anything, Fareed Zakaria says he's now buried it. He's pulled it, put it in cold storage. So where does Biden want America to go? And how does Biden want the world to see or believe that he's making a change? Now, Iran, the nuclear deal with Iran, Blinken had criticized Trump's additional sanctions on Iran by calling them predatory unilateralism. कि आप दादागिरी कर रहे हो, एक ही आदमी खड़ा होकर एक तरफ से सब गड़बड़ किए जा रहा है. You are not engaging with Iran. But this government has made no effort to engage with Iran. And if you think that somehow that policy that Trump had of not engaging with Iran, of withdrawing from the deal, and also putting more and more and more sanctions that punish the people of Iran was working, Fareed's article would tell you that it's not working, because in 2018, Iran had 300 kilos of stockpiled enriched uranium. Today, they have 3,000 kilos. So whatever you've been doing is not working. And you know, when something is not working, you try and change it. And people of America have changed their president because they wanted to change things. But things on foreign policy are not changing. They are just slowing down in many areas. So policy that's being now followed by Joe Biden looks like much more of an America first policy than Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, say, at least people were a little bit afraid of him. Nobody's even afraid of Joe Biden, particularly the way he has cut and run in Afghanistan. His body language after that, his and his aides, spoken word after that, and also the way he has now alienated his European allies by suddenly plonking the AUKUS into them. Can you imagine countries which have shared so much, the deepest and darkest of their secrets all these decades after the Second World War, particularly, they all now see that this America acts so much in its own interest that it can even keep all these important facts away from you. So when it comes to America's own interest, whether it's Trump or it's Biden, even more when it's Biden than Trump, because Trump at least blabbered and something came out, right? But Biden, jisko hum Hindi mein ya Punjabi mein kehte hain, misna. He's a bit on the misna side, which is a bit on the cunning side. Cunning side in a negative sense. That this guy can go and make a deal with two of our fellow allies while keeping the rest of the allies in the dark. That has really shaken up his image among his allies. Now I see a couple more articles. One interesting article on The Hill. Now On The Hill is a free publication in the sense that if we wish, we can also republish from it by giving it credit. I'm sharing the article with you though. This article is by K. Riva Levinson. K. Riva Levinson writes about Africa, understands Africa. She's on the International Advisory Board of an organization called Afrobarometer, which basically picks up opinion on democracies in Africa. And she says that, look at the record of Biden government. Looks like they pay no attention to data that's turning up. She says that Asia Foundation, which is a think tank that's been conducting opinion surveys in Afghanistan since 2004, funded by United States government. And their 2020 survey reports had shown that 95% of Afghans were angry about corruption in the Ghani government. 75% of Afghans worried about their safety under the Ghani government because they did not trust the Afghan military and Afghan police. So even if you paid attention to this, you would not have said that I was expecting Afghan army to stay and fight for months and months and months. The people of Afghanistan knew that that wasn't going to happen, but you didn't listen to the data, or you didn't see the data that was available to you. At the same time, while a lot of them, a majority of them, supported the peace talks with Taliban, 81%, underline that percentage, 81% said that they will not accept any settlement with the Taliban if it did not respect women's rights and individual freedoms. And yet, nobody in Biden administration paid attention to this, because they were doing exactly what they were accusing Trump administration of doing, that is of not listening to their officers, their establishments, to data, just doing jo mere dil mein aaya, today I wake up this side of the bed, I'll do this, today I'll wake up this side of the bed, I will do this. So this was their own data, and if they had seen this data, in fact, further on, the same data showed that 55% of the Afghans were saying that, look, if Taliban are going to have control over every province, we don't want the Taliban. So a majority of them would have liked some accommodation with Taliban, but they did not want the Taliban rule. But did Biden administration pay attention to this, to it? It did not. And then she goes on to also describe some of the similar data that's coming out of Africa. So three countries in Africa's Sahel region, which is where the most dangerous Islamic, pan-Islamic movements are currently rising and growing. Three countries there have had changes of government through coups, through military coups or dictatorial coups, and democracies have lost out. In all those countries, she shows that Africa Barometer, in that entire region, she says that Afro Barometer has thrown up data telling you that more and more people are dissatisfied with the quality of democracy they are getting, but they want more democracy. It's not as if they don't want democracy, they don't want dictatorship. And she says that America has to be conscious that when a democracy deficit arises, and what's a democracy deficit? When people, the amount of democracy people want is not available, then disastrous things happen. And these are things that Biden has to keep in mind, because he's the one who's now holding this global democracy summit in the US on December 9 and 10. So he can't be doing that and not paying attention to all of this. So what's happened now with the world? When Joe Biden looks at the world, or when Joe Biden's interlocutors try and read his mind in terms of what, how he's looking at the world and what he's done to the world. So see, forget how India feels, how Japan feels, how Australia feels, etc. See how Europe feels. France, for example, Macron has now said for a long time, he's repeated two ideas. One is European strategic autonomy. Second is European sovereignty, saying that, all right, we know that American protection is very important for NATO and Europe, but if that means getting dragged with you to all policies vis-a-vis China or any other policies that is not acceptable to us, then we are strong enough to make our own decisions. And that's where France seems to be headed now, and that's what a lot of the European countries will also be thinking, that if America is going to be only defending itself while giving these big speeches, now Biden's been giving these big speeches about promoting democratic ideas, and he will hold this democracy summit, but he's not delivering on this at all. And that's got people very, very worried, because the only thing more troublesome than an unpredictable Trump in America is a predictable Biden, predictable to the extent that he will be another Trump in his America First priorities while being so deadly boring at the same time. So that's the problem. And see what the American voters are doing. So see the poll survey results. Now, Iowa, which is a famous swing state, that tells you that at this point, 31% approve of Biden's performance, 62% disapprove. Now, this disapproval in the first year is the highest ever in a long time. It's much higher than Obama and Trump in their worst time. So Donald Trump at 35% disapproval, Barack Obama at 36%. Biden already had 62%. His handling of Afghanistan, only 22% approval. His handling of COVID, only 36% approval. You thought that he's done brilliantly on COVID, but he hasn't. Maybe his country is suffering in the states that don't listen to him, states which are run by other parties, which are more conservative. But the fact is that his approval rating on his COVID handling in this Iowa poll is 36%. Gallup. Now, if you look at the history of Gallup, it tells you that whenever the incumbent for the midterm elections to American parliamentary houses, America has two elections, midterm and then along with the presidential election. In the midterm election, if the president's approval rating generally is below 50%, then that president or his party can use up to 37 seats. Now, Democrats today only have a majority of three. It's a very thin majority. So at this rate, they could lose their majority. There's a very good chance that they will lose their majority, and Democratic Party is worried as hell. Once again, the latest Gallup nationwide, that is Gallup for September 1 to 17, that is until last week. That tells us that Biden's approval ratings are down to 43%. They are below 50%, and a majority, that is 53%, now hold him in disapproval, which looks very bad for him. In fact, more importantly, among the independents, people who are not committed to either Democratic side or the Republican side, and whose votes ultimately determine who's going to win, their approval rating between June and first half of September has gone down from 55% to 37%. So that is the big change right now. So once again, more and more American media I read, American pundits I read, foreign policy pundits, and they are saying, no, Europeans are saying, look, we were relieved we don't have to deal with Trump anymore, but we are frustrated having to deal with Biden because we don't know what we are dealing with, because there is no delivery on anything. He speaks all the sweet words, but delivers nothing. So more and more of America's allies now think that they have to act in a more independent manner. And Biden has to deal with that situation. On that, I read an interview on Politico. It's on a political show called Politico Nightly, and it's an interview conducted by Renuka Rayasam with Ryan Heath, who writes the famous Global Insider newsletter. It's a very highly reputed newsletter. This article is actually headlined, Biden Goes Back to Foreign Policy School, because he's a foreign policy dada, and he's now realizing that before him, three presidents, that is Bush, Obama, and Donald Trump, have been telling their allies to act more independently, to stand on their own feet. So the allies, particularly in Europe, have worked on that. And today they have the ability to explore their own options if they feel disappointed by America. And that's exactly what is happening. So this is a world, the world that Biden has stepped into as president after a 4-year interregnum of Donald Trump, is substantively a different world from what he might have seen during the Cold War or after the Cold War, when America was the only superpower. This is a changed world. And so far, he has not quite measured up to be able to handle this changed world. And this big event in New York, when he'll be meeting so many world leaders, particularly leaders of countries who are friendly to America or allies with America, even Narendra Modi, the world will discover how much they can rely upon Joe Biden. And that is something, that is the big question that will be on Narendra Modi's mind when this meeting takes place.